Well, hello, and welcome to the iFormerX podcast. This is Stuart Haynes, and thanks for joining us today as we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care community and geriatric pharmacy practice. And if you're not already a member of iFormerX, please take a moment to sign up. It's easy and it's free to health professionals and anybody studying to become a health professional. Just head on over to our website, iFormerX.org, and click on the join or sign in link, which is in that upper right hand of the navigation bar. Respiratory diseases like asthma and COPD are among the most common chronic diseases, and medications play a critical role in both preventing and treating exacerbations. While corticosteroids play an essential role, in the treatment of asthma, not everyone with COPD benefits from inhaled corticosteroids. And for this reason, blood eosinophil counts are now frequently used to determine when an inhaled steroid might be beneficial. But what about acute exacerbations? The use of systemic steroids is recommended, but the potential for harm is also pretty significant. Could we use eosinophil counts to guide steroid therapy for COPD exacerbations too? Well, that's a question the recently published STAR-2 study attempted to answer. Now, you might be wondering how this paper is relevant to ambulatory care and community pharmacy practice. Well, given that many pharmacists in ambulatory care and community pharmacy settings are getting involved in test and treat programs for acute infections, it just makes good sense that pharmacists would also be involved in initiating the screening and management of acute COPD exacerbations. We now have point-of-care test device that can measure eosinophil counts, and we know that initiating effective treatment for COPD exacerbations as quickly as possible can prevent hospitalizations. So from a cost-effectiveness perspective, empowering pharmacists to manage these patients could significantly improve not only health outcomes, but also lower costs. And here today to tell us a bit more about the STAR-2 study and its implications in practice are Dr. Hope Schrader-Sherman and Dr. Marikar Kaunson. Dr. Schrader-Sherman is a PGY2 ambulatory care pharmacy practice resident at the John Peter Smith, or JPS, Health Network in Fort Worth, Texas, and Dr. Kaunson is one of her preceptors. Marikar is an ambulatory care clinical specialist, and she cares for a wide variety of patients under a collaborative practice agreement. And if you're not familiar with JPS and the clinical pharmacy services they provide, I encourage you to check them out and consider telling your students and residents about their ambulatory care residency program, because it's top-notch. Well, Hope, thank you for being on the iFormerX podcast today as a first-time contributor. Marikar, welcome back. It's great to have you both here.
Hi, Stuart. Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for having and welcoming both of us onto the iFormerX podcast, Stuart.
So Hope, before we talk about the STAR-2 study, I'd like to talk about the management and treatment of COPD and the use of eosinophil counts as a biomarker to make better decisions when to use inhaled corticosteroids. First, what's the role of inhaled corticosteroids in the chronic management of COPD? When should we consider adding it to a patient's regimen? And is eosinophil-guided therapy the gold standard now, or is it something that just is nice to do but not yet strongly recommended?
Yeah, so the 2024 GOLD guidelines actually do have some recommendations when it comes to starting inhaled corticosteroids for COPD. They do suggest looking at blood eosinophil counts to help decide when to start inhaled corticosteroids. Basically, patients with COPD who have these higher blood eosinophil counts tend to have more type 2 inflammation, and this kind of inflammation is expected to respond more positively to these inhaled corticosteroids. There are multiple studies that have shown a reduction in these COPD exacerbations with the addition of the inhaled corticosteroids. However, these studies are thought to have some confounding variables and limitations with their study designs. For example, the IMPACT and the ETHOS trials did show a significant reduction in these COPD exacerbations in patients receiving triple therapy versus the dual LABA/LAMA therapy. However, these studies also were designed in a way that likely selected for patients who were more likely to be sensitive to inhaled corticosteroid rather than being more representative of the general COPD population. It is important to note that it is estimated that only around 10% of patients with COPD have these frequent exacerbations and these elevated blood eosinophil counts that would meet these recommendations for inhaled corticosteroid therapy. But the number of patients who are actually prescribed inhaled corticosteroids has been observed to be much, much higher. Inhaled corticosteroid use has been shown to lead to increased rates of pneumonia, oral candidiasis, and long-term use could be associated with decreased bone mineral density, worsening glycemic control, and even cataracts. Despite this, the GOLD guidelines do outline how to select patients who may have more benefit from these inhaled corticosteroids, and it lists differing eosinophil cutoff points depending on the circumstances. For example, if they are initiating therapy in a patient who is GOLD category E, meaning they've had two or more exacerbations in the past year, or one exacerbation leading to a hospitalization, the guidelines recommend that an inhaled corticosteroid be considered if their blood eosinophil count is greater than 300. However, during follow-up, if a patient is on a LABA and a LAMA and they're having exacerbations, an inhaled corticosteroid could be considered if the eosinophil count is greater than 100.
So Hope, let's take a closer look at the STAR study. The official title of that paper is Blood Eosinophil-Guided Oral Prednisolone for COPD Exacerbations in Primary Care in the UK, STAR 2, a non-inferiority, multi-center, double-blind, placebo-control, randomized control trial. So we can already tell a little bit about the trial just from the study name. But the paper was published in the Lancet Respiratory Medicine in January 2024. Of course, we provide a link to the original paper on our website, but can you give us a brief summary of the study methods and some of the key findings?
Of course. And like you mentioned, it is a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial, which evaluated two different oral corticosteroid dosing methods in participants experiencing a COPD exacerbation. The study was initially designed as a superiority trial. However, it was later converted to a non-inferiority trial due to an error in the randomization software. Participants were included in the trial if they had a history of COPD, were greater than 40 years old, and had at least a 10-year smoking history. However, they were excluded if they had any other clinically relevant lung diseases. The two arms of this study looked at standard therapy, where all patients received oral prednisolone 30 milligrams daily for 14 days, regardless of their blood eosinophil count during an exacerbation. And then the intervention arm looked at the same dose of prednisolone, but only if the blood eosinophil count was greater than 2%. Patients in this arm who had a blood eosinophil count less than 2% received a placebo. And all patients received background therapy with oral doxycycline for 7 days. There was a little under 50 patients randomized into each arm of this study. The primary endpoint, which evaluated the rate of treatment failure at 30 days, showed that blood eosinophil-guided treatment was not inferior to standard care, where all patients with a COPD exacerbation are treated with oral corticosteroids, regardless of their eosinophil count. The secondary outcome also found that there was no significant difference in CAT score, so like their COPD symptoms, their FEV1, other markers of inflammation or infection, such as their leukocyte count, neutrophils, and C-reactive protein. The safety outcomes looked at the number of adverse events, and overall, it was low and similar between both arms.
Well, Hope, a couple of things struck me about this study. First, the study was initially designed as a superiority study, but it was subsequently converted into a non-inferiority study. You mentioned what led to that decision, but whether you believe it cast doubt on the validity of the findings and the conclusions. And I'm also wondering if you are convinced that eosinophil-guided therapy truly is non-inferior to the current standard of care, which is to give everybody a steroid. Are there any confounders or sources of bias that you think might have impacted the results?
Yeah, it was originally designed to be a superiority trial, and that was to fill a gap in literature since several non-inferiority trials already existed on this topic. However, the investigators discovered an error in their randomization software that resulted in some participants receiving the incorrect therapy, such as patients receiving a placebo instead of oral prednisolone, despite having a high eosinophil count, and vice versa. These participants were not included in the statistical analysis, so the study investigators changed the design to a non-inferiority trial due to the reduced sample size and the subsequent reduction in power. In addition to this, there are other limitations with the study. Firstly, the study began enrolling patients in around 2017 in the UK, so the evidence guiding their study protocol is no longer standard practice. They used doxycycline as background therapy to treat these COPD exacerbations, whereas the current guidelines recommend azithromycin. The study also used steroids for 14 days, whereas currently the recommendation is 5 days. And that could contribute to more side effects with this longer duration of oral corticosteroids. The study population may also not reflect the actual COPD patient population due to a relatively low number of patients being current smokers compared to what's seen in the US COPD population. And they also had a relatively high use of inhaled corticosteroids at baseline, which may further confound the results. Now, there are some strengths of the study too. Firstly, patients did receive background antibiotic therapy for their COPD exacerbation. Additionally, adherence to the study therapy, so both the antibiotic and the steroid, was defined and measured. And lastly, even if patients were not included in the efficacy outcome due to being incorrectly randomized, they still evaluated their safety outcomes. Overall, this is not the first study to show that eosinophil-guided therapy in COPD exacerbations is not inferior to standard practice. This definitely adds to the growing body of literature. However, as I mentioned, there were significant weaknesses and confounding variables that make us question the validity and applicability of the results.
Well, Marikar, I'd like to get your take on this study. Should this study change practice, or maybe the total body of evidence change practice? What do you think? Should we routinely be getting a blood eosinophil count in order to make a better decision about managing patients with COPD exacerbations? And does this create another opportunity, as I think it does, for pharmacists to provide test and treat programs, particularly in community pharmacy settings? And this is my final question. Are eosinophil count point of care devices CLIA waived? Is this kind of a test that a pharmacist could actually perform?
Stuart, to answer the first part of the question, I think we as an audience need to remember that while the article presents intriguing findings and insights, using point-of-care eosinophils to initiate systemic steroids in acute COPD exacerbations is still limited. Therefore, it is our opinion for practitioners to maintain current approaches until more robust evidence emerges. However, there is a possibility that as data continues to accumulate and if it becomes more conclusive, that this could create opportunities for pharmacists to play a pivotal role in implementing test and treat programs in the community. Evidence continues to emerge that supports the efficacy and safety of such programs, and pharmacists are able to utilize their accessibility and expertise to offer convenient testing services and initiate appropriate treatment interventions when indicated. This expanded role could significantly improve access to timely care and contribute to better management of various health conditions within the community. However, with the implementation of such programs, we would just need to be considerate of regulatory frameworks, training requirements, and collaborative practices that would be essential to ensure the successful implementation and optimization of such programs. And to answer the final part of the question regarding CLIA waived tests, at this time, the eosinophil count point of care devices that were utilized in this study are not currently on the FDA list of CLIA waived analytes. However, pharmacists are increasingly being recognized for their pivotal role in public health, and one of these aspects is pharmacists' abilities to perform CLIA waived tests. The tests are typically deemed straightforward and accurate enough that they can be performed outside of traditional laboratory settings, and therefore can empower us as pharmacists to provide timely diagnostic services directly to patients. Such examples of CLIA waive tests that we could implement as pharmacists are administering flu and strep tests or cholesterol screenings or possibly glucose monitoring. The expanded scope of practice not only improves convenience for our patients, but could help strengthen the healthcare infrastructure by leveraging pharmacist expertise in promoting preventative care and early detection of health conditions. So should eosinophil point of care test ever be considered a CLIA waived analyte in the future and literature at that time supports its use, there is the possibility that we as pharmacists would be able to perform them.
So Maricar Hope, I so appreciate you writing the commentary and participating in this podcast episode with me today. What I really hope this study gets people thinking about the potential role that pharmacists can play in COPD exacerbations. Now, it's true that the test is not CLIA waived yet, but I think similar to acute infections like influenza, COVID, and strep throat, timely and effective treatment is critical. And empowering pharmacists to screen and initiate therapy when a patient's experiencing an acute exacerbation makes good sense. But what do you think? Feel free to leave a comment on the iFormerX website. Only iFormerX members can leave comments and use the interactive features. So if you're not already a member, sign up today. And if you like this podcast, do me a favor and rate us on your favorite podcast app. We don't have a big marketing budget. Actually, we have no marketing budget. So your positive comments and five-star ratings really help get the word out to new subscribers. And you may have heard that we've partnered with the American Pharmacists Association. And if you are a geriatric pharmacist and you would like to earn board recertification and continuing education credit for listening to this podcast and reading the written commentary, you can. If you want to learn more about the APHA's Literature Evaluation and Evidence-Based Practice Series, just click on the link that we've posted just below the written commentary on our website. And lastly, I want to give a big shout out to Michael Klepser and his brother Don Klepser for their pioneering work in developing community-based test and treat programs, which are extending the frontiers of pharmacy practice, but more importantly, are making treatment to patients more accessible, more affordable, and more effective. Point of care testing has become an increasingly important part of pharmacy practice, but that didn't happen by chance. It required vision and advocacy and data. So thank you, Michael and Don, for your tireless work to make point of care testing and test and treat programs a reality. Well, until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormerX, signing off.